What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
NBA free agency, not exactly the frenzy of prior years, more of NBA trade season. We've seen a lot of it, and we've seen some interesting things done around the NBA. Nobody better to talk about that and to help navigate the new world, the new era of the second apron. It's Bobby Marks of ESPN. Bobby, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
How are you? Good to have you. Good to have you on.
Yeah, absolutely. On the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline, Bobby Marks joins us and help us understand, if you can, how the Cavaliers, with Ty Jerome coming off his incredible, the efficient season that he had, we thought he was going to maybe get starter money from a team.
Yeah.
That certainly did not happen, and he's no longer on the Cavs. How did that go down?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a matter of, you know, where the market was. I mean, you did see players like Nikhil Alexander-Walker get, I guess, non-tax mid-level money, which is $14 million, you know, to pay a, and Ty had a really good year, you know, I guess to pay a backup, you know, starter type money is probably not the, the world we live in now. It's almost like players are pegged or slotted based on where they are as far as whether you're a starter or your rotation. Certainly in Cleveland, you have, you know, your core guys are making a lot of money. And then you have, you know, Sam's going to come in at a, you know, $8, $9 million number. He's your bench guy, right? So you almost slot guys as far as how you perceive them. And that's, you know, the day and age of having like, you know, four or five max guys is over. And yeah, I mean, he gets it. And I think there's also he gets a player option in the third year. He goes to a Memphis team that potentially he could be playing a lot. You can kind of build your value back up again and then hit free agency in 2 years.
Just the way that, you know, just looking at it from a team philosophy, you know, Ty Jerome last year was so good that there was almost zero drop off from Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland to Ty. Now, I understand he did not perform well in that Pacers series, but it didn't seem like anybody performed well outside of Donovan Mitchell in that series. So why do you think they felt that he was disposable, but not Sam Merrill?
Yeah, I mean, I think shooting is probably a little bit more of a premium. I think the ability to get, you know, and you knew what probably what number you wanted to walk away from or what number you wanted to go down the path with Ty before you did the Alonzo trade to get him. And you get him on a, you know, a 2 year, $10 million per year in the second year's team option there. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of different variables there. I think, you know, were you willing to commit 3 years? Were you comfortable with, you know, fully guaranteed 10 years? You know, was it maybe even more? So it's, you know, Lonzo gives you, you know, when he's healthy, you know, pretty high level backup you know, certainly could start and everything here. But I think there's a lot of kind of intangibles as far as why Ty in Memphis makes more sense than maybe him at Cleveland. Cleveland fans are like, why couldn't we have had him on that 3-year, $27 million contract? And that's probably something for Ty to answer here. And I think it's, as I said, it kind of gives him the opportunity to go back into free agency in a couple of years.
You know, when I see other deals given out, like Gary Trent Jr., what, 2 years, $7.5 million?
Yeah, the minimum.
Were agents totally off? Were they not necessarily ready for just how little money was going to be available?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a lot different than, you remember 2016, we had that cap spike. And everyone went out and made a lot of money. It was like basically like the housing market. I think agents were caught off the following year, and then there was no money, and a lot of agents got fired because their client was saying, well, "Wait a minute, if Timothy Mozgov or Joakim Noah or Bismack Biyombo already getting $14-15 million, that's what I got. I want, and you know, there's only $6 or $7 million there." I don't think they were caught off guard. I just think the market is, you know, we see an influx of extensions, and the marketplace, by doing that, I think we had like 40 to 50 last year, it just condenses as far as how much teams have to spend. I mean, you can certainly say there was Brooklyn that had cap space, and then Milwaukee goes out and creates cap space, but at a premium where you're getting, you know, $25 million or, you know, $23.5 million hit for the foreseeable future here. So, I think there are some, like, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. is a good example. Like, for him, you know, the market probably for what he was looking at probably wasn't great. But you could go to Denver and come off the bench and with Jokic in that group and really, you know, flourish. And maybe you can make your next contract up next year.
Bobby Marks joining us right now on the hotline. Hey, give me a better way to explain to our listeners and fans what is going on with the second apron. They're sick and tired of hearing it. Almost every conversation we have does reference it in some way. So How can we simplify all of this?
Well, it's funny. I went on the Dan Patrick show yesterday, and he asked me that. He goes, "Okay, if you're going into a school of fifth graders, how would you explain it to them?" And I was like, "Wow, I've never really been asked that before in that way." And it kind of got me like thinking. And so basically, how I explained it, and hopefully this makes sense, is that if you were a child and your parents gave you 20 toys and you had everything you could play with, and then the next year they came back and they said, "Well, wait a minute, you can only have 5 of those toys. Pick your best 5 toys. Give me the other 15 back." That's kind of the apron, as far as it makes you kind of pick and choose as far as who you want to keep. You can keep your own, but as you guys are going through, it makes it awfully expensive. What it doesn't allow you to do, if you're that child, you can't go over and say to Johnny, "I want to borrow 2 of your toys," and because that's not allowed now because of how punitive these are, whether it be in trades or in free agency to go out and sign players here. There's no penalties for besides the cost, you know, standpoint and you know the first round pick stuff that we can explain. You are allowed to pick keep your team together here, but you know, there's the financial angle of it that makes it awfully expensive. We saw it with Boston as far as the deconstruction of their roster. We're probably going to see it with Phoenix coming up in the next few days here. But the goal was to try to level the playing field and give more parity, you know, and we've certainly seen it. It's had a severe I've said this before, and hopefully my friends in the league don't get mad. I've never seen 2 words that scared so many billionaires before. I mean, it really is. I mean, like when the Lakers sale was announced a couple weeks ago, and Mark Walter, who is the owner of the Dodgers and has, you know, got a ton of money, everyone said, "Well, look at what the Dodgers have been able to do. They've been going out and basically buy a roster. You know, there's no salary cap and everything like that. How is it going to impact the Lakers?" And I was like, "Well, look at Steve Ballmer's one of the wealthiest men in the world, and so is Joe Lacob. Look at what happened with them last year, right? I mean, the Kroenkes, Walmart. I mean, they're scared of the apron. Josh Kroenke has come on TV and said it. So it does make you what it does is make you really become creative. It makes you like, I don't want to say teams were lazy beforehand, but it makes you negotiate. And you kind of have to draw a line in the sand as far as what's important to you and what's a priority and what's more of a luxury.
All right. So you mentioned why the NBA changed its ways. People had really gotten tired of the superstars all teaming up. The super teams felt like nobody had a shot outside of three or four teams. Well, clearly that's different now. We've had seven different champions in 7 years. Did we go from zero to 100 when maybe we only needed to go to like 50? Why did they go to such lengths to completely overhaul their CBA?
Yeah, Golden State and the Clippers ruined it for everyone else. I mean, that's probably what happened. And maybe even Brooklyn we can throw in there. No, that's I mean, it's a good point as far as we went. Because it's funny, we, you know, the rules came into place in 2023. And I, you know, I'm like, I felt like I was like a weatherman. You know, I was kept on saying, the storm is coming, the storm is coming. And then I wrote an article last June and people were like, where'd these rules come from? It was like, they were introduced 2 years ago. And I think it's funny, if you're a Cavaliers fan who never had to deal with it, now you're getting an introduction to the, you know, the apron rules and everything. And that's one, you know, listen, there's been a lot of talk about LeBron and what happens with him and Lakers, and can, you know, hypothetically, can Cleveland get him? And basically the answer is no, because the apron rules, the inability to aggregate contracts, combine contracts to send out, doesn't allow you to go out and add, you know, a marquee player if you're buried financially.
It just feels like we would understand it if we were a super team, right? And we had built a team inorganically. I mean, we drafted Darius Garland. We drafted Evan Mobley. We made a great trade and got the superstar to sign an extension. And yet feels like we're being penalized. And what do we have to show for it? We haven't been out of the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah, and you got Jared Allen, too, in a terrific trade, right? I mean, it was like kind of like, you know, in the as part of that James Harden trade here. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think there are – listen, Brooklyn tried to put a super team together. You know, certainly, you know, Golden State, you could make the same thing for, as far as they paid a price, significant price, and they drafted Curry, Thompson, and Green. I know they added KD there. So, yeah, it's you know, I do think there are – I would love to see – teams not, you know, I mean, you know, from a salary standpoint, you know, maybe guys that you draft, you're not charged the full amount from a salary standpoint. Maybe we're looking at two different columns here, because then it does reward you a little bit more as far as the ability to kind of retain some of your in-house talent.
All right, Bobby Marks with us. Just a few more. The pecking order in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, Indiana is out.
Yeah.
The injury to Ty Halliburton obviously changed the complexion of everything. But would you kind of weigh in on where Atlanta is? Yeah. Nobody's talking about Philadelphia and what just went down with the Milwaukee Bucks and the Dame Lillard move.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could start from the top. I mean, I think, you know, Cleveland, I mean, it's funny. Nobody talks about Cleveland. They won 64 games, and I know they lost in the second round, and they bring back pretty much everyone. But I think Cleveland and New York are the two best teams, just based on they're like the last man standing, right? They didn't really lose anyone significant. I know Ty hurts a little bit here. And then after that, it's like, you know, Philly's a wild card, and, you know, they were the winners last offseason. But it's going to be dependent on where Joel Embiid is. I mean, that the health standpoint plays a significant role. And Milwaukee with the Turner addition, but you lose Lillard, and I know Damian was going to be out most of the year, and they bring back most of that roster. So they're kind of in the middle. Of course, you know, we haven't talked as much Atlanta Hawks and Orlando Magic on TV ever. We've been talking about them, and rightfully so, the last couple of days, just because of what Atlanta's been able to do and add, whether it be Porzingis or Nikhil Alexander-Walker or Luke Kennard, Ethan Newell they drafted, and then Orlando certainly with Desmond Bane trade, and they add Tyus Jones. They've done a nice job. The East is, you know, I think it's pretty wide open. You know, we're not talking about Boston. We're not talking about Indiana, who lose Turner. We'll see Detroit, of course. We can probably throw it in the mix here. But I do think there's a lot of parity. But I do think, you know, we can't dismiss Cleveland because they won 64 games. And as I said, I know losing this was disappointing here, but you do return pretty much that whole roster.
We played a clip yesterday on the show. Kevin Durant on a podcast with Steve Nash and LeBron James said, this league is not for small guards. It's really tough to win. Obviously, the Cavs are built with two guards that are short. Donovan Mitchell, you wouldn't really classify him as small, but Darius is obviously someone they alluded to. Do you think there are plenty of different ways to still win in the NBA, or do you think that it'll be tough for the Cavs to get over the hump with their setup?
I don't think. I mean, listen, I know, I mean, New York's got a pretty small guard in Jalen Brunson, and I know they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, I mean, Shea's length is probably, you know, Shea's 6'3", but he's long and athletic here. I just think it's a matter of, like, what else is around that player, right? I mean, I think it's a matter of, you know, if you have two small guards, what's, you know, who's your 3, 4, and 5? I think that makes a big deal. And I mean, I think it is a little bit different maybe in the playoffs, and matchups make it a little bit harder as far as from a guarding standpoint. I think every team is kind of different here. I wouldn't dismiss just because you have a small guard that you don't have a chance to win a championship.
One final note, you've worked at NBA front offices, and it seems like now agents are dictating a lot more in the draft, especially later in the first and into the second. If you are someone who has to field a phone call from an agent that says, I don't want you guys to pick us, what are you doing?
I'm probably picking you. I think everything is circumstantial here. I think a lot of it is different. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, teams did not have the ability to have medicals. Unless you came and visited, or maybe they showed up for the free draft camp, and not everyone did. I think the information that you have on a player is more available, whether it be medical, whether it be background, whether it be everything that comes with it here. I mean, the Utah situation was certainly unique, and with Ace Bailey, who they drafted, and then was he coming, was he not coming here? I think sometimes, you know, 18-year-olds or 19-year-olds are given bad advice. I saw Ace Bailey get drafted last Wednesday. He looked like the happiest guy in the building. And I saw him get off that plane on Saturday, and he looked like the happiest guy, him and his family here. So I do think you have to be careful as far as steering your client. Listen, we saw in way back when with Eli Manning, right? He didn't want to go to the Chargers. He wanted to go to the Giants, and they did a really good job of that. But I do think there's a difference between doing that and then when you get drafted and then all of a sudden be like, no, I don't want to go to that team. I think that's two separate things.
All right, Bobby, appreciate everything. You're terrific on social media. And anytime you can talk to someone like me, like a fifth grader, and help dump something down.
That's my new, you know, I've spent 2 years learning the apron now, and I never realized I could just explain it like a teacher in fifth grade, you know?
All right, great stuff, Bobby. We'll do it again.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Bobby Marks on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Tom Haberstroh is from Yahoo Sports. He wrote that story, and right now he is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Tom, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you.
Hey, no problem. Happy to be here.
All right. First of all, let's LeBron James 3.0 is an interesting thought around here in Northeast Ohio, especially with the core four that we have right now. And to obviously get LeBron to come back here for a third time would mean breaking up that core four. So just as you put, you know, your fingers on the pulse of the story when you went to go write it, what were your thoughts as you wrote the story?
Well, there's a couple things going on here, which we have to discuss, is that the core four has been pretty disappointing in the postseason the last 2 years. Some of that just performance-based, just not meeting expectations, but also injuries, is that you can't tell one story without the other. Mm-hmm. And I think that Cleveland certainly wants to win a championship without LeBron. It would be an amazing story, go from the number one seed last season, kind of put everything together this upcoming season, and win the big one. But they seem very far away from that, given how the Indiana series went and how the previous season went. So starting from that place where they have this kind of this hurdle that they just can't seem to overcome. That last regular season, I was saying this was maybe the best Cleveland team ever, maybe even better than the 2016 team based on their point differential, their record, and how they were killing people in the regular season. But then you see this storyline, this soap opera that's happening out in LA, where the Lakers still have not announced LeBron James's return. It's very bizarre that they have basically sat out this offseason. They let Dorian Finney-Smith walk to Houston, a rival that they're trying to beat in the Western Conference. And then they sit out on all the centers except for DeAndre Ayton, who was just waived by the Blazers. And is that your championship roster right now? Because they don't really have many moves left. And so I think LeBron James might have gotten wind of this, that the Lakers and Rob Pelinka might not have been going all in while he's in his age 40 season, turning 41 in December. And I started in my head trying to figure out what is the move behind the move. And to me, given how horrible the Eastern Conference is right now, and that was the gist of the story, was LeBron should have his eyes on going back east, because how bad the East has gotten since the playoffs started, and also how good the West is. I just think that LeBron James, for winning a championship, he's much better off going east. And right now, Cleveland is the best team in the East, and also a team that might be hungry to add a player who's second team All-NBA last year and has already won a championship in Cleveland. It might be the missing piece.
Tom, when the Kevin Durant trade demands and everything out there with the Phoenix Suns, I said, if you put Durant in between Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley, you've got a phenomenal opportunity to win an NBA championship. I would have loved Durant here. He's younger than LeBron. He's different than LeBron. If at age 41, LeBron came here, I still like the chances of Mitchell and Evan Mobley and LeBron more than I like the core four and whatever you could put around it. Do you think the Cavs would feel that way? And what do you think about that?
Well, there's already been some kind of rumors and whispers about Darius Garland being potentially available in a trade. You hear that about a lot of stars in the league, and certainly with one that is dealing with this turf toe injury that required surgery, and he's probably going to be, you know, questionable to begin the season healthy. And if you watch Desmond Bain go through the same injury a couple of years ago, the first year coming back from an injury like this is not pleasant. It is not not an optimistic scenario with Darius Garland coming into his age 26 season and trying to defend at a high level with the finals you saw between these two teams, Indiana and Oklahoma City. Like, the bar to clear for Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell in the backcourt is so much higher than I thought. That Indiana did this to every team that they played, with Andrew Nembhard and Aaron Nesmith and even Tyrese Haliburton just raised his level defensively. I think that Cleveland is looking at Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell and seeing the fact that they're owing them about $300 million going forward over the next few seasons, and thinking, can they really compete on a two-way level with the best teams in the NBA? And I think the four-team trade that I proposed in this article, which involves Utah acquiring Darius Garland, I think it makes sense from the standpoint that Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell are not elite two-way players. And to win a championship, you need as many of those guys as you can. And LeBron is one of those guys, as we've clearly seen over the years. He takes it up a notch in the postseason and becomes an all-world defender. Even at age 40, I think he's able to flip that switch. I think for the Cleveland Cavaliers, it takes a real gut check, real looking in the mirror to identify the weaknesses on this roster. And I think what Channing Frye said, and I mentioned it in the piece, Channing Frye said there's no bully on this Cleveland Cavaliers team. And in order to have a bully, they have to do some roster changes. And I think LeBron is that bully that they could be seeking, someone like Kevin Durant that you can go to, and they just tilt the game in their favor in the postseason. And I think they'd really lack that on this roster.
Tom, I thought you said something really interesting right out of the gate about winning without LeBron in Cleveland. And, you know, we've talked about that before, that in some ways it feels like that is that's the bar that the front office and ownership in particular in Cleveland wants, and to try to be able to do that. It seems like they came close. What would it mean, and how difficult of a decision is it, you know, for Dan Gilbert to say, okay, we got to go back to LeBron the third time here?
Yeah, I can understand that is the goal, is to prove that we don't need LeBron, that we're bigger than LeBron, that we can do this without LeBron. I just think that the Lakers felt the same way, is like, we don't need LeBron, but it would be great to have him to chase a championship. And they did just that. Mm-hmm. I think other teams, Pat Riley included, feel like, I don't need LeBron, but if we can get him, he's LeBron James. He might be the greatest player of all time. And so put your personal grievances aside, or personal biases aside, and the chip on your shoulder that you want to do this without LeBron. The two other teams that won a championship with him They felt the same way, probably. Like Kobe Bryant is a god in Lakerland, and they decided, the Lakers did, let's bring in LeBron. And I think the same thing in Miami is with Dwayne Wade. They all put their egos aside and they said, if we have a chance to bring in LeBron James and be the face of the franchise, so be it. So I think all these teams that have been able to play with LeBron over the last 20 years, I think they all faced a similar choice, and we all know how it ended in championships.
Tom Haberstroh joining us from Yahoo Sports. Tom, the idea, and you've thrown it out, we've talked about it as well, the core four with the two smaller guards, that's tough. If the Cavs, let's just say they roll it back next year, as they've said they're going to, but you know what are they going to say at that point? If they roll it back and it doesn't work, you can't do it again after next season, can you? I mean, you've got to, I would think enough is enough, and you got to change it up a little bit, do you not?
Yeah, and especially with the repeater tax and the tax implications of keeping them together, I think if you're clearly not in that top tier and fighting at the very end to make it to the championship, I think you have to break it up. And look, we've seen 2 years of this, and yes, there have been injuries that have given the front office and the coaching staffs and the players an out, an excuse, like, hey, we didn't have all our guys, and the other teams did. But I would also posit that even when they were healthy, like when they were actually getting, you know, 2, 3, 4 of their guys on the floor, it still wasn't maximizing their potential. So I do think that the game is very different in the postseason, and Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell in particular can be exploited. And this is a weak link NBA now. And what I mean by that is teams are so smart now and can kind of move the chessboard around that they are going to target weak links either offensively or defensively. They're going to leave you open if you can't shoot offensively. But defensively, if you can't guard your yard, they're going to target you relentlessly. And Tyrese Haliburton used to be that guy that they used to target, and he got way better this next season. The thing about Tyrese Haliburton is he's way taller and way longer than Darius Garland is and Donovan Mitchell is. And so they're able – Tyrese is way more able to make up for those defensive issues with his size. And Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland simply can't do that. They can't get bigger. They can't get longer. And I think ultimately, I was big on this team, the Cleveland Cavaliers, to go deep into the postseason this past year. But I've come around on the idea that this is not a core group, the core four, that can win you a championship. After what I saw with the Oklahoma City Thunder and Indiana Pacers, it's really hard for me to envision that this group can beat those two teams fully staffed.
Agreed.
Tom, I'm also kind of looking at that second apron thing and how it hinders, you know, the Cavaliers like tremendously. I mean, is Garland their only money they have in the checkbook to try to make moves and try to get better? And how do they do it? That's the bigger question I have about the Cavs. And I think everything you've said, it was like dead on. Is that the only money they have in the checkbook?
No. I mean, they have long-term money on all those guys.
But I'm saying to get rid of them, right?
Yeah, but I think Darius Garland, the reason why you get rid of Darius Garland is because I think teams are always looking for a lead guard. And they already have Donovan Mitchell. And so it might be a little duplicitous to have Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland. And so for Utah, they've been desperate to find a lead point guard. And he's young enough that I think they could be interested in that. So Evan Mobley, I don't think he moved that kind of talent. Jared Allen's interesting. He's in that 14 trade going to the Lakers, but now with DeAndre Ayton, even on a 1 year deal, maybe they're not as interested in Jared Allen. But I've already previously written that I think the Cavs, you know, Jared Allen is a rim running rim protector that a lot of teams would covet, and including the Lakers. And he's a long term contract at like $20 million a year around there. It's pretty good. But Darius Garland's a lot richer contract. And so that's why I think, because of the duplicitous role with Donovan Mitchell, he would probably be the first one to go.
All right, last question, just because we're going to wrap it up here. LeBron James being a Cavalier next year, odds? Or give me a percentage.
I'll go 30% odds that he's a Cleveland Cavalier. I think the Knicks are really interesting, too.
All right. Substack is the other place we want to hit you up, right? And that's Tom the Finder on there, right? I just want to make sure I got it right.
TomTheFinder.com, Basketball Illuminati Podcast, as well as my Yahoo Sports stuff. So that's where you can find me.
Tom, we really appreciate your time today. Take care.
Thank you, Tom.
You got it.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, hopefully again. Again, he was on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
This guy's always right. He's the lead NBA writer at NBC Sports. His name is Kurt Helin, and he joins us here on The Fan. Kurt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm looking forward to getting through the end of free agency and summer league so my vacation can start. And I'm telling you now, it ain't Michigan. So.
Oh, okay. Well, where is your vacation? Where are you going?
Actually, because of some stuff, we had to kind of tweak our plans this year. So we're just kind of staying local, but we're in Southern California. So we're just going down to San Diego for a few days.
Oh, wow.
Nothing too thrilling this year. But San Diego's
beautiful.
Good sandy beaches. Good sandy beaches, like the cleanest city in America too. It's always fun there.
San Diego's the only place where I've been like, I want to live there when I'm like 70 or 75 or so, that I spent 3 days there like 20 years ago. And I'm like, that's what I'm doing when I'm 75, as I become a snowbird and spend my summers here and winters elsewhere.
That's a smart call. It is a really beautiful city with like I said, just a lot of opportunities and options and great weather. So and a mediocre baseball team if you want it.
And that's what it is. So Kurt, we got one too though. So not to brag, ours is just as mediocre as the Padres are right now. Let me ask you why we wanted to have you on was we saw your report yesterday, obviously talking about LeBron. Can you give us some detail into the Cavs' lack of interest in LeBron?
I was told that they weren't, actually I said lack of interest might be a strong word, but strong way of phrasing, but they're just not that motivated to jump into this. That everybody's kind of waiting to see how this plays out with LeBron and the Lakers and what the dynamic is there. It's the first time in LeBron's career that he isn't the focus of the team's offseason, and keeping him happy isn't. Like the Lakers are shifting, but I was told that Cleveland, look, if the price is, and frankly, I think it's this way. If the price is Darius Garland and DeAndre Hunter or whatever you've got to do to match that salary, man, you just got 15 years older. And did you really get better? As much as bringing LeBron home is nostalgic and all that, if Darius Garland doesn't have turf toe during the playoffs, this might be very different. And I don't know that they're that eager to switch things up. If the price is right, they'll do it, but I'm not sure they're jumping at it.
Is the reluctance a little bit of, I guess, the other things that come with LeBron? You have a locker room that is, you know, they're very kumbaya. They're very zen. You like each other. They're nice, great guys. Do they worry about, you know, bringing a LeBron in with Evan Mobley or Donovan Mitchell, who is already the leader of the team? And do they feel like that could kind of, I don't know, put a little bit of a little bit of artificial timetable in what they want to do?
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, like I said, the problem with switching is, hey, first off, wherever LeBron, you guys know this, wherever LeBron goes, LeBron is the culture, right? LeBron is the locker room culture. And that can be a good thing in some cases. Frankly, the Lakers could benefit from LeBron pushing DeAndre Ayton this year to actually, you know, care for even half the games. If in an established locker room where you have a pecking order, it's kind of a different vibe. And so there is that bringing it in. And again, you're talking about the short-term game. Like, you've got a team set up to contend for, I don't want to say the foreseeable future, but things are short in today's second apron at NBA. So you've got a team that can contend for a few years. If you bring in LeBron, you get 1 to 2 seasons, and he's still a top 10 player in the league, probably be a top 12, 15 player in the league this year at age 41. But that, you know, you don't have him for long. And then, so you're really shortening and tightening the timetable, bringing him in.
I guess I would wonder, how long does this Cavs core have together anyway, though? Like, if you think about the salaries and just how much they're going to balloon in the next couple of years, it's not like you have a long runway anyway.
That part is true. Like, I don't think anyone has a long runway. Even like Oklahoma City may be set up better than anybody for that. And frankly, later this summer, Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren are going to get their massive extension on top of Shea's, and they're going to have, even they with, I forget the exact number, but I think it's 4,685 draft picks in the next 7 years. like you're going to have to start shedding salary. They're not going to be able to keep Caruso. They're not going to be able to keep Hartenstein. Like that. And that's a team that's kind of perfectly set up for this. Everybody is going, your window's just going to be short. You're not going to have the kind of dynasties that you were able to, just because guys are going to get paid. And it's not even greed. Like, guys are going to get paid what they're worth. And you're not going to be able to do it.
When you take a look at what the Cavs are, and, you know, if you do get LeBron, and you talked about LeBron and how, you know, does it move the needle or not? If you bring LeBron back, depending on what goes out, is the calculus saying, okay, if we do bring LeBron back and we don't have to give up, say it's DeAndre Hunter and Jared Allen or something like that, and you're able to keep a Darius Garland, is that enough for them to say, okay, well, we feel like we can be the prohibitive favorites in the East, as well as win against OKC? Or are you looking at it as, well, you're probably going to win the East at staying pat with the moves you just made now, so why don't we just stay where we're at?
I think that's the calculus. If it comes to this, I think that becomes the calculus. A, look, personally, I'm not a big fan of giving up Garland, because I just think he was fantastic last year and the playoffs were unfortunate. But if you could do it with Jared Allen and Hunter and whatever other in the Lakers kind of need a center, and Jared Allen is a pretty good center, man. like maybe you could talk them into this with the right setup, then I'd have to consider it. The thing is, it's funny, I was just putting together last night for the first time for next year, I just, like, let's rank the teams in the East and kind of put them. It is Cleveland 1. Cleveland should be on top of everyone's list. The only other team I would even put on the, man, if things go, maybe if everything goes right, they could be a contender tier in the East, is New York. now that they're coached by the obviously brilliant Mike Brown, they that's a good team. And then you get to Orlando, who I really like as an up and coming team, but they're kind of up and coming. And I like their off season. Atlanta had a really good off season. You're kind of into this second tier of teams. I think you're right there anyway. So it really comes down to me, like, if you're going to bring LeBron back, assuming he's leaving, it's a matter of price. And I don't, you know, Jarrett Allen and good role players are one thing. To me, Garland, who's an all-star and, again, 15 years younger, is a different animal.
Kurt Helin, lead NBA writer at NBC Sports, joining us here on 92.3 The Fan. So let me ask you, do the Cavs give LeBron then the best chance of actually getting a title?
If LeBron wants to win, if he's going to lead the Lakers to contend, you want to get out of the West. And I don't mean like, I mean, just get out of the West, because even if he were able to, I don't know, go to Houston or whatever, like, you still got to get through Oklahoma City. And by the way, Denver had a really good offseason, and they still got Jokic, and they took OKC seven games. And then you go on. The West is just deeper right now, where if you move to the East, even certainly this season, this coming season, because of the injuries, and even next season a little bit, the path is just, it's cleaner. And so I think that, so yes, in the end, Cleveland's the place where you go, where if winning another ring is what his real biggest priority is, then Cleveland's probably the best place to go.
Let me ask you this question. This is, you know, speculating, obviously. You know, we don't know. We can't get inside of LeBron's head. But do you think he's at this point comfortable with his legacy? And the reason I ask, because if he's comfortable with the place he's at, then I guess, you know, whatever, he can stay in L.A. and finish out or wherever he wants to go. He's already played with his son. But if he's insecure a little bit about the whisperings of where he's at in the pecking order, I think that might drive him to go some other places to try to see if he can win another ring. Where do you think he's at mentally with his career?
That's a really good question, because publicly he's out here in LA, he's been very much the calm, like, no, man, I'm not worrying about that. I just want to keep contending. I want to play meaningful games, kind of thing. But he's always been somebody who's thought about legacy. And it's a really good question, because you can call it a two-person legacy, or you can put him on a tier and you can throw Kareem and whoever else you want in that mix. But, like, he's in this very top echelon, and how much does bringing another ring help that versus all the other contributing factors? Like, I don't know that he's moving his family and his back to Akron again for a year. You know, if they're staying here, does he want to go, or is this more of a Chris Paul situation where he's not with his family full time? And how does he feel about that? Like, there's all those other life decisions that you and I and everybody listening would have to go through if we were talking about moving our family or moving ourselves halfway across the country. Like, there's all these other factors, and I'm not totally sure where he is on that. I'll be honest with you. Like, I'm not sure internally if he's, I think he'd be happy to finish his career with the Lakers, but it's a weird situation for him. He's not been, they're transitioning, and he's not the center of the show anymore. And that's really different for him.
Yeah, no question. Kurt, it's been fantastic. We appreciate the insight as always. You're almost there at vacation. Are you? You're so close.
All I've got to do is get through melting in Las Vegas for a week, and then, you know, and we're good.
All right, we'll enjoy it. Thank you, Kurt.
Appreciate it.
Take care, man.
All right, good stuff right there. Kurt Helin, of course, on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. We're going to react to what he had to say. Do the Cavs give LeBron the best chance at a title, and how much does that matter to LeBron at this point? We'll get your phone calls. We'll get your tweets. Twitter reactions brought to you by our friends over there at Chapman Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. It's Jonathan Peetle and Garrett Bush. Afternoon Drive right here on The Fan. We shift our attention to the Lakers and LeBron James right now as we go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Jovan Buha, of course, of the Buha's Block, joining us here at 92.3 The Fan. Jovan, what's up today, man?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're good. We're trying to figure out obviously as many things as you're trying to figure out right now as well in relation to LeBron James. So it's been an interesting, I don't know, 72 hours or so. Obviously, we had Kurt Heelan and his report yesterday suggesting the Cavs not that interested in LeBron. But as we sit right now, how do you see this ending with LeBron and the Lakers?
I see this ending with him staying in LA. I think that's by far the most likely outcome right now. We have seen this playbook from LeBron before of applying public pressure to try to get his current team to upgrade the roster. And I think that is the most likely outcome here. Now, I will note, I think the one potential difference, if this does end up playing out a different way where he eventually asks out and ends up getting traded, is just that the finish line is in sight. Whether it's another year, another 2 years, maybe 3 years tops, although I think that's pretty unlikely. Like, the finish line is there for LeBron. And if he really wants to win a fifth championship, I think you can make a case that there are at least a handful of teams that would, that are ahead of the Lakers currently in the pecking order. And if he did go to a Cleveland or a New York or a Golden State or a Dallas, like, could that situation, depending on the pieces that those teams give up, potentially be a better one for him to compete for that fifth ring? So I think it really just comes down to what he wants, right? Because I think he's enjoyed playing in LA. He's enjoyed the off the court business ventures that he's had and just like growing his roots there and his family being there. And I think that's a big element of why he's remained, despite them not always being the most competitive or being a contender. But at this point, if he really wants to win a fifth ring, I think you can argue that it would potentially make more sense to go somewhere else. So he opted in. He chose the money over the flexibility in terms of opting out and either signing somewhere or sign and trade or something like that. So he did show he wanted to retain that money. But now, it just kind of comes down to, is he willing to actually demand out and potentially get traded for the first time in his career?
You know, Jovan, I was listening to a couple of days ago, and they had the podcast with him and Steve Nash. And you hear LeBron say, it's not all about rings and why we have live in a ring culture. And he got eviscerated by everybody. Old people, young people, new NBA guys, old people, they just was like, listen, you already know what this is. You're LeBron. You know how we judge this game. Is there something inside him that, because I think there's a lot of people that have seen that ring culture come, and I also believe that they've already moved people past him. There's, Kobe Bryant untimely passed. There's a lot of people who are now mentioning Kobe Bryant as head of LeBron. Is there anything left in him that says, listen, if I can get me one more, I can move the needle on some of this conversation? Or do you think it's just at this point, he just only has a couple more years to go and he's just ready to ride it out in L.A.?
I think that's a really good question. I don't want to speak, obviously, for LeBron, but I think he's wanted to win more championships. He had, obviously, the run in the 2010s of the eight straight finals and just having the misfortune of running into a juggernaut of a team, maybe the best team we've ever seen in that Warriors team in 2017 and 2018. And even in 2015, being banged up with Kevin Love and Kyrie. Then they pulled off the 3-1 comeback, of course, in 2016. But like, just had some misfortune. I think he's only been favored in three of his 10 finals appearances, maybe two or three. It's a pretty low number, where I believe MJ was favored in all six of his finals appearances. So this is one of those things that it's a barbershop conversation. It's a bar conversation with your friends about who's the GOAT, who's better, who's this, who's that. I do think that, one thing, for me, LeBron's the GOAT. I think he's the greatest player of all time. But if you're doing the LeBron versus Kobe thing, people on the Kobe side will bring up he's got five rings, LeBron has four. So I think there's an element there of, if he got that fifth ring and if he somehow got that sixth ring, then people can go to the finals record or whatever. But really, that conversation shifts where for a lot of people, the rings are the trump card of, if you have more rings and you're at the highest level of the game, then that's the thing that differentiates a LeBron versus a Kobe or LeBron versus a Jordan. So I'm sure on some level that there's that just like carrot of, if I could get a fifth ring or a sixth ring, there's really nothing else anyone can say about who's the GOAT, or they can't use that against me. But I just think it's how he's like this guy's been a winner at all levels, high school winning state championships and then getting to the NBA and immediately having success and going to the finals at a young age and winning MVPs and stuff. Like, this is just how this dude is wired. This reason why I think he's the greatest player ever. And at least at minimum, the second best player ever. So I think it's more so like his competitive spirit, but I'm sure you can't like not think about if I had a fifth ring that puts me at the same tier as Kobe in terms of rings and one under Jordan. And I think for some people that probably would shift them from, you know, the MJ side to the LeBron side. I don't think many, but I'm sure there are a few.
Jovan Buha, of course, of Buha's Block, joining us here on 92.3 The Fan. Let me ask you, if it's not the Lakers, what team would the Lakers the most be interested in dealing a trade with to go ahead and get the committed story picks, everything else in return for LeBron?
I think the two East teams that I referenced earlier in Cleveland and New York would make the most sense. You would be sending him to the opposite conference, so you don't have to worry about potentially facing him in the playoffs or, you know, that coming back to haunt you that you shipped out LeBron. With New York, there are a couple packages that work financially. You could do Karl Anthony Towns straight up, or you could do some combination of like OG Anunoby, Mitchell Robinson, Deuce McBride. So you get a starting level wing, which I think the Lakers really need, you know, a defensive minded wing like an Anunoby. Then you add Mitchell Robinson to what they have. And like, you know, it's not the best packages. And then I think with Cleveland, the issue with Cleveland is just that they're second apron team. So they either have to do some sort of salary dump to get under the second apron and then do the trade with the Lakers, or they could expand it to a three team trade, but it's potentially costing you, depending on the outgoing salary, it could even cost you Jared Allen and Darius Garland, which I think is a heavy price to pay for the Cavs. So that's where I think from Cleveland side, it might not make the most sense, other than, of course, it's LeBron and the homecoming. And I think it would be fascinating to see LeBron with Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley. But I think for the Lakers, like if you could get a Jared Allen type, like that's the type of center you've been looking for years. So I think those two situations, depending on the packages, would potentially make the most sense just because, again, you're sending him east. Those are two teams, you know, obviously played in Cleveland, but like New York, it's a big market. They've wanted him for 15 years, and maybe that can make some sense. But otherwise, like Dallas and Golden State, I think would be two other teams in the mix. But I just think there's a lot of risk with potentially sending him west.
That is fascinating. You talk about Darius Garland and Jared Allen. Let's go ahead and, you know, I'm going to get your ideas on this and extrapolate this out a little bit. Now, listen, this is all speculation. Just put that out there. But if you do have a Jared Allen, if you do have a Darius Garland moving west and you get LeBron, you got Donovan Mitchell, as well as Evan Mobley. We've been asking him to take a step, given the fact that they did go out and do some things. They got Lonzo Ball. Larry Nance Jr. comes in. They still got DeAndre Hunter, Max Strus, those guys. Does that move the needle more than staying pat for the Cavs as constituted? Does that really move the needle, and does that put the Cavs in a place where you would say that gives them an opportunity to say, if they played a championship team like OKC in the finals, that the Cavs could, you know, obviously win a championship with LeBron coming back?
It's an interesting question. I think it really just comes down to like who are the outgoing pieces, right? And if it's a situation where you can dump one of the lesser guys at the end of your roster or you know, a couple guys to get under that second apron, then maybe you know, one thing that works financially or close to works is like Jared Allen and DeAndre Hunter as the base of a LeBron trade. And if you could keep Garland and have Garland, Mitchell, LeBron, and Mobley, and then you figure out that fit starter spot, like, that's a pretty good team. And I think for people look at age 40, about to be 41, year 23, but he was still a top 10 player last year. He was second team All-NBA, sixth in MVP voting. Like, LeBron is still an amazing player, and especially if he doesn't have to carry as much of a load with Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley and Darius Garland there, I think that's the best quartet in the NBA. I don't even know if it's, you know, that there's one that's close to that. So I think they have a real shot. Obviously, the depth and the defense and some of the size would shift, and looks like they'd be playing, you know, more Evan Mobley at the five and just be a bit of a different team from an identity perspective. But if you can keep LeBron healthy and get him to the playoffs
We know about the history. We know about the track record and him potentially winning that fifth title in Cleveland, second title for Cleveland. Like, that would obviously be a storybook story. So, it's tough to say without knowing exactly all of the outgoing players, but if there was a way to minimize and make it maybe only a couple of rotation players, Jared Allen plus something else, I think they would still be right there at the top of the East and have a real shot to win a title.
Yeah, obviously you cover more than just the Lakers. You do all the NBA. Like, if I were to ask you and say, let's say Kobe Altman just keeps the whole entire thing in peace and one piece, and the core four remains, and there's not a big splash or a big trade, and Lonzo Ball is the only true addition that you have while Ty Jerome leaves, is that enough of a weaponry to go ahead and have the Cavs be NBA Finals winners? Or are you looking at them as maybe just a team that didn't get out of the second round once again?
No, I think they're much better suited, and it certainly, in my opinion, is you know, partly circumstantial in terms of I think their two biggest threats in the East both just suffered devastating blows. And Boston with the Tatum Achilles tear, and then gutting their roster with Porzingis and Holiday, and who knows if they're done gutting their roster. It seems like they are, but they're still right there around the second apron. And then Indiana with the Tyrese Haliburton Achilles tear, and then them now losing Miles Turner in free agency. So I like the Cavs already won 64 games last year. I expect them to be at worst in the high 50s, but most likely in the low 60s again. And to me, they're clearly the best team in the East. I think they're going to take their lumps from how the season ended, and they're going to, like, I think they got to change some things schematically. And I think the Lonzo Ball addition is huge. And he's a guy who I could see closing games depending on the lineup they want to go with. And maybe if it really gets to a point where there are some questions about Garland and Mitchell in a closing sense against certain teams, and they're able to target one or both players, then maybe you close with Lonzo. Like, I think if you got to keep him in bubble wrap, right? You got to keep him healthy throughout the season. But if you can, I think he could be a really valuable playoff piece as a bench guard. And I think about like what Sean Livingston did in Golden State in a different phase of his career. I could see Lonzo having that type of impact. Different types of players, but like I could see him having that level of impact. So I still have Cleveland at the top of the East. I think, again, they're going to win 60 plus games, and they should at least make the conference finals, if not more. Obviously, New York and Orlando, I think, are the other two big competitors, but I would pick Cleveland head to head over either one of those teams.
You look at the new, the new collective bargaining, and we talk about the second tier and apron and things like that. You see a lot of teams selling, a lot of teams ownership. We talk about the Lakers and the Celtics, and it just seems crazy. The Celtics were just the big bad wolves just a year ago. They have one injury to Jason Tatum. Now, Porzingis is gone. You lose Drew Holiday, Derek White. Even people are talking about him being on the trade block. Is this the intended consequence? Is this what the owners wanted when they signed this deal? Because it just seems like teams have 1 or 2 years to really go for it and get it done before you have to start thinking about the ramifications of being in the second apron. Do you think this is the way they envisioned it?
I think it's been a little bit more extreme than they envisioned it. I do think that they wanted to increase the parity around the league. I think they wanted to even the playing field, give smaller and mid-market teams better opportunities to compete with. I was looking at even the last, 10, 15 years of the league, it was very heavy of the Miamis, the Golden States, the Boston winning, and the Lakers. And there's, of course, been exceptions with Cleveland and Milwaukee, and I guess Toronto's a big market overall, but by NBA standards, because it's in Canada, maybe it's not viewed that way. So I think like they've wanted to kind of shift it more toward the NFL model. That's something that Adam Silver has referenced multiple times, is wanting to be more like the NFL and having that parity and having that optionality to any team could win on any given year. I do think there was something like novel and fun about OKC in Indiana. Like, no one had that on their bingo card. I think OKC, of course, was the favorite going into the season, but like no one had Indiana making the finals, I think, even going into the playoffs, let alone like at any point during the regular season. So that was fun. That I think it was a fun finals. And if Haliburton doesn't go down in that first quarter, I think Indiana had a real shot to win, and that would have been a really fun game seven. So I think the season, like, I think the NBA is in a much better spot than people talk about it, but the owners created this. The owners wanted this, and I think it's had some unintended consequences where now you have a Milwaukee stretching Dame Lillard and eating $23 million a year for the next 5 years, which is just absolutely insane. So I think there's been some unintended consequences that they did not foresee, and it's going to be interesting to see how they navigate this moving forward and potentially try to make some changes to the CBA.
Check him out at Buha's Block, Jovan Buha. We appreciate the time and the insight, and we'll catch up with you later. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you guys for having me on.
All right, good stuff right there with Jovan, and we'll react to a little bit of what he had to say, especially with LeBron. Does it matter where LeBron goes if it's not the Cavs? 216-474-0092. G-Bush, Jonathan Peterlin with you guys right here, Afternoon Drive.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Ivan the Fan. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. Let's start this hour off on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We get set for the Guardians and Cubs, and you know it's Tuesday night, big time TV tonight with the MLB on TBS, and Ron Darling will be on the call. Ron, thank you for joining us again. We always love having you on the show. Please tell me you pack some offense on this road trip, because the Guardians have been struggling to find runs in the last four games. They found six in one of those, but otherwise it's been goose eggs like crazy. Hi, Ron. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for you guys for having me back. And yes, I've been crunching you guys' numbers all morning, and I haven't figured out the Rubik's cube of your offense yet. But you know, listen, you've got some good players. You got some players that have underperformed. You know, Fry is a big part of your offense. He hasn't gotten on track since coming off the IL, so it's in there. It just hasn't come to fruition, especially of late. You know.
What does a pitcher do, Ron, in that situation? The rotation's been really good as of late for the Guardians, but they know they're pitching, you know, without a safety net. They're not going to get a whole lot of runs most nights. How does that affect what they do?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, you got your guy, one of the great nicknames in the game, right? The big rig, Gavin Williams, pitching tonight. I'll tell you what you can't do. You can't go into the game and say, boy, if I'm not perfect, I have no chance. Those are the things that you can't worry about, because you have no control over it. All you have control over is being as good as you can be. And Williams, when he's at his best, you guys have seen him. He's
he's the full package and just getting better. You know, he's taking the next step this year. Absolutely. And, but you can't worry about your offense. You only can worry about what you can control, and that is keeping the ball down, keeping the ball in the park against the Cubbies team. And, you know, if your team, which has been, you know, your offensive guys, if they get shut out like they have three of the last four games, I mean, what can you do about that? You have no control. So I think you just have to concentrate on what you do.
I think the other part that they got to avoid is looking at the standings, right? I mean, they're 11 and a half back. That's the biggest gap between a first and second place team in all of Major League Baseball. And I think as a fan, you're sitting here going 11 and a half back. And I know Jeff and I were like, well, okay, well, we got to be careful. It's July 1st, but man, that feels like a mountain between the Guardians and Tigers right now.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, this is the largest lead the Tigers have had since their magical year in 84 when they started out 35-5. That's another thing. You're right. You can't worry about that because you're not going to catch them if you continue to play the way you're playing. So, you know, one of the things you have to concentrate on, and I know Stephen Vogt and his staff are making sure they convey this message, is, you know, you just have to figure out a way to win tonight, and then you'll kind of – figured out the next day. The great thing about this wild card era, though, is this is not without precedent. You know, the 2019 Nationals were 11, 12 games under 500. They won it all. 2021 Braves just lost to Acuna. They were 10 or 11 games under 500. They won it all. And the Mets last year, who made it to the NLCS, were 11 or 12 in June. They had that record, so they came back as well. So it's not without precedent. One of the things that's great about this wild card era is if you hover around 500 or better, you're going to be in some kind of race. And then if you make a big move in August and September, then you'll secure a spot. So it's daunting, absolutely, but it's not something you can't overcome.
Ron, I wonder about hitting today and pitching today, and you see batting averages around the league not where they used to be, and team batting averages not where they used to be. According to what Baseball Reference, team batting averages have been under 250 for like the last 5 or 6 years. Is that a problem that needs corrected, or is that okay? You know, I think back to the 60s when they lowered the mound, you know, when pitching was dominant. Should anything be done here, or is it just pitching's doing a great job, because it really is?
Yeah, and it's kind of scary when you see guys like Keynes and Milwaukee's Mizorowski and the Reds, Chase Burns, even though he got hit last night. You're seeing all these big arms. Like, when does it end, you know, for these hitters? Well, as far as the batting average is concerned, in today's game, the powers that be that run the game don't care about batting average. You know, they care about OPS. So one of the things you're going to get from professional players is that they will go where they're going to be paid, where they're incentivized. So if the front office doesn't care about batting average, neither do they. So the continuation to try to find slug in their game is still going to happen unless we go back to incentivizing being able to put the ball in play, elevating guys from AAA, like Luis Arraez type players, guys who put the bat on the ball. Stephen Kwan, of course, who plays left field for you guys. If more of those players are brought to the big leagues, then you'll see batting average go up. It's very similar to starting pitching. You know, the powers that be incentivize going as hard as you can, as long as you can, hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. But if they paid major league pitchers only on innings and starts, you would watch them pitching a lot more innings and a lot more starts. That's kind of how professional sports works. It's a very, I know for the fan at home, it's got to be so frustrating. And at times for me, it's frustrating, you know. And that's one of the places to me that I see the sport having to watch itself, because you know, the starting pitchers matchup that when I was a kid, I would look in the paper and say, I've got to watch this game or I've got to track this game because it's two heavyweights going at it, happens less and less often. And I think that's bad for the sport, in my opinion.
That's a great point. Sometimes we get caught up in it because we know how good he is here. And And then we see through the All-Star game sometimes that he is recognized nationally. But Jose Ramirez, I love hearing like your perspective and outsider's perspective on really how lucky we are to have this guy and that he decided he wanted to be here. And I think fans get it. They understand it. But it's kind of an outlier in all of professional sports.
Yeah, I think that's what makes there's 1,000 things that makes Jose special. But that he chose to stay in his town, unlike maybe a Garrett Cole and Pittsburgh, although he was traded. But you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
We always 99% of the time, we get athletes that say that they want to stay, but they've got to test the market, see what they're worth, whatever. And occasionally you get a real dedicated to the town athlete like Jose Ramirez, that understands he's very comfortable where he's at. He's happy where he's at, and he's happy to take a hometown discount. Can you just imagine what he'd be worth on the free market after the Soto contract? So those players very rarely come around, and when they do, they should be cherished, not only by the sport, but also by the fan base that they play for, and certainly that has happened in Cleveland. The story I probably have told you before, but one of the things that I love about Jose is the 1 year, I think it was maybe 3 years ago, it was Kwan's first year, maybe 2 years ago, and Tito Francona had told him, Jose Ramirez, hey, listen, we got a lot of young guys. We're only going to have a chance if they watch the best player on our team hustle and play harder than anyone else. And he went out and did that, which he always does anyway. And it inspired that team to the postseason. So it's those kind of players that there's not enough of them.
Ron, do you think there was, and I'm just saying this just because the fans love it. I love it. I think, you know, there's a lot of ways to love it, but do you think the MLBPA was upset with him? Do you think other players were upset with him because he probably could have got a lot more money somewhere else? Or is that just kind of mythical? Because we hear that all the time. When Jim Thome left, the stories were flying around left and right that he was getting pressure from the MLBPA. And how would you walk away from Philly when you're going to make a deal like that? And I just kind of wonder what the inside baseball story would be on that for Jose if the MLBPA would reach out and go, "What are you doing?" You know, one of those kind of stories.
Yeah, no, that's I've never been asked anything like that before. That is a real peek behind the curtain. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys are supposed to know that. Someone's going to come to the show, open your door.
You've spent way too much time in New York, man. Way too much time.
I don't think that happens between the MLBPA and the player.
Right.
But that certainly happens between the union and the agent.
Ah.
The agent would certainly get a call and say, hey, listen, this is where he fits, and this is where we see him fitting, and what are the contracts? What does the contract look like with Cleveland? I mean, that kind of stuff I can certainly see happening. So it makes it even more courageous when a player says no to all of that kind of undue pressure and just does his own thing. Hey, listen, it's your career. It's not the MLBPA's career. It's not the owner's career. It's your career. So you can do what you wish to do with it. And Jose did that.
Ron Darling joining us. He'll be doing the color commentary on tonight's TBS broadcast of the Guardians in Chicago against the Cubs and baseball on TBS every Tuesday night. Ron does a great job with that. The Guardians can't score runs right now. We've talked about that a little bit, Ron, one of the lowest teams in Major League Baseball. There are a couple of young guys who have been hot in AAA. How do you balance, if you're Steven Vogt, if you're Chris Antonetti, if you're Mike Chernoff, the want to make the offense better, but being patient with the guys who are here rather than bringing up a guy who, though he might be doing okay in AAA, might not be quite ready yet?
I think that I always feel like your people, who are some of the smartest people in the game, are conservative. You know, they would rather that when the player does come up, that they stay up. That's always a hard call. I've seen players come up who had bad AAA numbers, and the next thing you know, they're the biggest part of your team. I've seen guys come up that are automatic shoe-ins. There's no way they're going to fail, and they go one for their first 50. So it is a very difficult call because it's not always about the player. Sometimes it's about, it's not always about the stats. Sometimes it's about what the player has is insides. And also, from lots of discussions, the jump from AAA now to the big leagues is as big as it's ever been. The pitching in AAA, you will see average velocity of fastballs in the 92, 93 area, where you come to the major leagues, it's 95 to 96. That's a huge change, an uptick in velocity and speed of the game for players that are coming from AAA. But I think that your organization in the past has been very conservative. You're also a team that, you know, has a hard time going out and deciding to get a bat that's going to cost them a lot of prospects or going to cost them a lot of money. So that's not going to happen as well. So going in as a fan that those are kind of the premises you're dealing with. If I were, Chris and, trying to think about what I can do, I always look at it this way. There's 26 guys in that room, Voter and his staff. They're grinding. I've never met anyone that's ever gone into a game or a season and says, you know what, I'm not going to be good today. Everyone always is trying to max out what they're doing. And I do know that the players in the room really appreciate when ownership and the people that run the team understand that and give them some oxygen every once in a while. I know that's a big boost.
Ron, thank you. As always, give the folks the lowdown on tonight. When will we see first pitch for you guys? And talks about a little bit about tonight's game against the Cubs.
Well, come on with Brian Anderson. I know you guys like Brian Anderson. He's one of the best in the game. He just did the French Open, Roland Garros, so I'm going to try to get him to do it in English.
Nice. Our broadcast.
So you can catch us at 7. But if you can, at 6:30 we have the pregame show, and it's Lauren Chahadi, mm-hmm. and it's Jimmy Rollins, and it's Pedro Martinez, and it's Curtis Granderson. But Jimmy's going to do a whole thing on Ramirez and switch hitting tonight. So if your fans love that kind of stuff, Jimmy's one of the best about talking baseball and especially switch hitting because he did it at a high level as well.
Outstanding. All right, please tell Brian Anderson we said hi from Cleveland because he'll always be our other Brian Anderson. If you get a chance, ask him about how the Brian Anderson, who's currently in Tampa, who's originally from Cleveland, stole his hotel room at a Fox conference. If you get bored, that'll be good to talk about over dinner tonight.
Well, listen, we might even do it in game. Well, when your Guardians have a 6-run lead, maybe we'll go into each of them cashing the wrong paycheck.
Okay. Oh, you got them all. And a 6-run lead? Man, I'm gonna start praying right now.
Yeah, we're good. Ron.
Thank you, Ron. Okay.
Take care.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Rod Darling was outstanding as a pitcher. He's also outstanding when you listen to him call any game. And tonight on TBS, MLB has spent, especially with our other friend, Brian Anderson. Not our Brian Anderson, the other Brian Anderson. They'll be calling the game tonight on TBS. And, of course, he was on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Mary Kay Cabot joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Mary Kay, I have kind of a dumb question to ask you later on in the interview. Do not let me forget to ask you possibly one of the dumbest ideas or smartest ideas I think I've ever come up with, Mary Kay. But first, I heard you on Baskin and Phelps. You saying, hold on, let me get the quote here. Long shot, Deshaun Watson plays at some point this season. I don't know, Mary Kay. It feels like an about face.
No, I've been saying that he's around, he's in the meeting rooms, that that he's throwing to wide receivers, but I still feel personally, and I've said this many times on this show and others, I really think the ship has sailed here for the most part for Deshaun Watson. I don't envision him playing this season, and I think it's going to be a long shot even next season if he's still on the roster, which he can still be on the roster next season because he would count $80 million against the cap if they tried to cut it. So I don't think it's an about face at all. I've been saying that he is here. He's helping guys. But as far as actually getting on the football field, I don't really see that happening.
Yeah, Mary Kay, maybe nobody cares because he just wasn't flat out good enough, and it's been a disaster from basically moment one. You thought maybe He could pull people in by just his elite play. We haven't seen any of that. We haven't even seen average play. But with all that said, like, does he have any kind of a relationship with anybody in town? Are there any, like, next level relationships, not like shallow relationships, from teammates to people that cover him? Like, I just feel like I don't know anything about Deshaun Watson other than what's been in the news over the years.
Well, I think that a lot of his teammates like him. I mean, you saw so many of them really get very, very upset when some, not everybody, when some fans cheered while he was down with the Achilles. His fans, including Myles Garrett, of course, Jameis Winston, and a bunch of others, Nick Chubb, jumped to his defense. So inside the building, the players have always liked Deshaun. I'm sure there might be some that don't, but for the most part, he has been a good teammate, okay? You can say whatever you want about Deshaun in any other aspect, but inside the building, he's been, for the most part, a good teammate, especially this year. Now, last year, as I wrote in a recent column, the Browns were not overjoyed that he wasn't around during the tough times of the 3-14 season after he re-ruptured the Achilles and after he ruptured the Achilles the first time. They were not overjoyed that he wasn't around very much. Even though he had rehabbed the shoulder in Los Angeles, there was sort of a feeling like, hey, it would be nice to have you around here. Well, that's all changed now. He has been here every day since he had the second surgery, and he has been present in the building, and the coaches have raved about what he's done inside the building in terms of helping other guys and things like that. So he's not as much of a villain, I don't think, amongst his teammates as he is amongst the fan base.
Mary Kay, could we go into the season with four quarterbacks on the roster?
Yes. Yes, I have said that and written that. I have a headline on that. So, yes, they definitely can go into the season with four quarterbacks on the roster. And the only way they won't do that is if someone makes them some kind of an offer that they can't refuse. But I think they probably envision using some combination of Joe and Kenny at some point during the season. And then I think they would like to see the rookies also at some point during the season. I don't think they're going to start the season, Dylan or Shador. I think it's going to come down to Kenny or Joe to start the season. And then I think they would like to see those guys later, if it lends itself to that, as they work through their new quarterback room for 2026.
Mary Kay, what do the rookies have to prove to Kevin Stefanski that shows that they're ready to take the reins of this offense? I'm not talking about week one. I mean over the course of the season.
Well, I have a series going up over the next 2 weeks. Today it started with Joe Flacco, and I kind of take a look at what each guy needs to do to win the job. And in the case of Dylan Gabriel and Shador Sanders, Dylan would just have to show a complete mastery of everything to the point where he's ready to go out there and play fast. The thing about Dylan is that he has a computer-like processing speed. I had talked to someone at the Senior Bowl that told me that he was as good as anyone when you put him on the whiteboard and you talk ball with him, that he's just very, very quick in picking all of that up and understanding it and already knowing a lot of that. So in the case of Dylan, it's just a matter of, it would be to go out there and show that he can play fast in this system and that he's connecting well with the players that he would need to, the Jerry Judy's, the David Njoku's, Cedric Tillman's, and that he can handle everything that's going to be thrown at him. He's got a very well-rounded game already and a good grasp and understanding of the whole pre-snap process and beyond. In the case of Shador, I've written this many times that he was not as up to speed on some of the kinds of terminology or concepts or long, complicated play calls and different things as Dylan was. He didn't come in with a real enormous football encyclopedia of those things. But the Browns have discovered, and people want to lose the second part of this whenever I talk about this, but this part is important. He also has an incredibly high football acumen, and he can quickly pick all this stuff up. It's just that he hasn't had to bark out the real long, long plays and all of that kind of thing yet. So he's coming up that learning curve quickly, and they saw that in the final 2 weeks of the last week of OTAs and the week of minicamp. They saw how all of his studying really lent itself to a good performance on the practice field. It translated. And if he continues to do that and he shows back up for training camp with even more knowledge of the system and more mastery over the terminology and all the things that you have to do pre-snap, then he's going to keep himself in the mix. And he's in it right now. He kept himself in it with a really, really good two final weeks. And he didn't take himself out of it with the speeding. He's not out of it because of that. So I think those are the things. He's got to show that he can do all the pre-snap stuff as well as he does the post-snap stuff. And he has an edge, I would say, in some ways, on Dylan in the post-snap stuff, just in terms of accuracy, touch on the ball, and those kinds of things. So those are some of the things.
I know I'm putting you in a tough spot because it's been really hard to separate the quarterbacks just based on what we've seen so far, and it hasn't really been anything remotely related to real football. But who would be, of the four quarterbacks, do you think the favorite to not be here once the season started? For one reason or another, maybe a trade, maybe just not good enough, just whatever it is, just that one quarterback.
Well, like you said, I think all four quarterbacks are going to make the football team. And I've said that and I've written that many times. It's difficult to predict at this point which one would be the odd man out if one had to be. I don't think one has to be, and I don't think one will be. But if I had to pick one right now at this moment, I suppose, and I don't even like to do this because I don't see this happening, I suppose I'm going to say this, but also say I think there's a good chance Joe can start the season. But I suppose there is a chance where if someone made them an offer that they couldn't refuse, if a quarterback goes down in training camp and said, we have to have Joe Flacco, maybe we're going to make them some kind of an offer for him. I suppose he would be the one that a team might be most likely to come after to get them through their early part of the season or whatever the case may be. But I think he's going to make the team. And I think he still has a good shot to start in week one, as does Kenny Pickett.
Steelers made a lot of moves, and I know you're paying attention to the rest of the division, not just the Browns. One of the moves they haven't made is either signing T.J. Watt to an extension or trading T.J. Watt. If you were the Steelers, Mary Kay, would you trade T.J. Watt?
Oh, boy. I suppose it depends on what you think you can get and what you think you can get out of that. I think that when Myles Garrett wanted to be traded, I think it became evident that it's hard for a team to give up that much draft capital for a player like that and that much money. Because when you are trading for T.J. Watt, you are also taking on a salary of more than $40 million a year now, because he's going to want to top Myles Garrett. So that's going to be the going rate for a player like that. And so I think it would be tough. I think that, like the Browns did, I think that they would probably be better served by hanging on to him and letting him do his thing.
All right, now I got a wild question for you. Okay, when the Browns move into their new stadium in 2029, they'll have the wall of fans, which I believe they will call the dog pound. I don't know if anything's official yet, but you imagine that's going to be the dog pound, right, Mary Kay? Right.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of people this week, now that it looks like we're moving forward with the stadium, they're going, oh my gosh, you know, the 3-14 and we're rewarding a team that isn't very good. And I go, wait a minute, I got an idea here. What if, you know, the second time I say it, Tone, I don't have that much confidence in
it. Come on, Kay, just ask her.
They go, you know what? It's the team has to play well enough for the dog pound to be the dog pound, that we will just have that section and they will sit in the, fans can sit in the end zone. And we won't call the dog pound until the Browns make the playoffs in the new, either in the new stadium or the year before they're going to the new stadium. Your thoughts?
I think it's such an incredible marketing technique and strategy for the Cleveland Browns, and the dog pound is such an enormous, huge part of the Cleveland Browns that I think it will be incorporated into the new stadium right from the beginning, and I don't really have a problem with that. They've seized it. There's dog merch everywhere. There's barking everywhere we go. I think the Browns and the dog pound are synonymous, and I think it will persist and carry over into the new venue.
Well, yeah, I know that, but what if they just decided, hey, our team has to earn the dog pound before we put any signage up, so we have to make the playoffs, and then we'll put the signage up, and it will be officially the dog pound?
I'm saying no. I'm saying no.
If you think it's stupid, you can call it stupid. It's okay.
Well, I'm not going to say stupid.
You can call me stupid.
I'm not going to say stupid, but I think it's a little unrealistic. Mm. Besides, they're going to have their quarterback of the future by next year, so they're going to be on a roll.
Oh, I thought you were saying they're going to get their quarterback of the future this year. I thought you were talking about Shador or Dylan Gabriel. I didn't know. You got me excited there for a second, Mary Kay. Do you believe that they're still drafting a quarterback in the first round as of right now?
I think they should.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should. If you have two first-round picks, if you have those kinds of assets, I'm almost convinced at this point that you have to take a quarterback next year with the first with your some combination of your first round picks, however you can work that out. I think you have to, in a rich quarterback class, that you've got to toss your hat into the ring, and I don't think they're going to be sure about Dylan or Shador by the end of this season, so I think you almost have to do that. And then if you end up keeping those two guys, which there's a good chance that they could, then you've got a pretty low budget, high potential quarterback room for next season. And if you collect some assets at that position and you find yourself with a surplus, you can trade one or two of them somewhere down the road, or just have a cost effective quarterback room, especially next year, in a year when Deshaun is going to count $80 million against the cap, although they will restructure that.
Mary Kay, I saw you tweeting about the exciting WNBA announcement. Will you be getting season tickets?
I don't know yet. We have season tickets to everything.
I know you do.
Really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Never mind. I didn't. Congratulations on all your season ticket success. I had no idea about that, Mary Kay.
Well, we have, partial season tickets to everything. Yeah. We don't have full season tickets to everything, but we do get to enjoy all of the amazing sports. So I wouldn't be surprised. I come from a big basketball family here in the Cabot-Merman household.
And the cake habots,
yes,
as Lyman would say. All right, Mary Kay, thank you very much for the time. All the best.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Happy 4th.
Same to you, Mary Kay. Mary Kay Cab on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. If she wanted to call it stupid, she could call it stupid.
Well, I did get some messages.
Keith wants you to rip me for this idea. I know he does. And I'm like, well, I'm just throwing it out there.
Well, I did get some messages from people saying the dog pound has been dead for a long time.
Yeah, that's why I say maybe it should be up to the team to revive it.
But then again, Mary Kay just said everywhere she travels, it's dogs barking, it's references to the dog pound. Obviously, we know the signage in the stadium reflects that. So, you know, maybe it's just not the same for everybody. I don't know. I mean, there are some things, right? The dog pound captain, I think they've knocked that out of the park so far today.
And it would be great, just envision this with me, if they opened up the stadium, say they make the playoffs, they lay the gauntlet down, and then when they make the playoffs the next year, when they have the dog pound, they can officially make it the dog pound, and they can make Hanford Dixon and Frank Minifield the dog pound captains. And they break the guitar, and the signage gets unveiled, just like what they did with Joe Thomas's name there on the side of the stadium. Boom, there you go. There you go. Okay, just everybody think it's stupid. I'm just trying to be proactive.
Hold on.
You guys all sit there and say that, well, they don't deserve a brand new palace or three. Okay, they won three games. Let me have them earn something out of this. Nah, Kenny's an idiot.
Are they going to be bleacher set up?
Nah, forget it.
Like the dog pound
forget
or
it.
What?
Forget it. Just fine.
For what?
Fine. We'll do nothing out of competition. Everything's just handed. You know, there was a wise man who once said, everything is earned here and nothing is given.
Will there be a chain link fence?
No, you can't do that in 2025 or any other year that's past 1995.
Do you want the dog pound or do you want the, what do you want? Well, harken back to the glory years or not?
Listen, man, I'm fine with a chain link fence. I don't think the fine people at the NFL or public safety, for that matter, would like a chain link fence anymore.
You know, if you fall the wrong way on top of it, you could get speared.
They also used to build these things out of all wood. No, I don't think they do that anymore.
No.
All right. Is it a good idea or a bad idea? 216-474-0092. I'm saying that they got to make the playoffs and earn the name of the dog pound.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation while they collect dust? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With a Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus. To kickstart your rewards, visit Gemini.com/card today. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy. Issued by WebBank, in order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.